Hello, it's Scott Manley here. Over the last couple of years, we've seen companies like Varda launch spacecraft into orbit, do science, and then bring them back to Earth, with the ultimate goal being that they will revolutionize manufacturing. They claim that there's a whole bunch of specialized materials and processes which can be performed better in microgravity, and this means that the materials they bring back will be so much better than those found on Earth that they will justify the extra expense of launching into space. So, what is behind this? Why are some processes better in microgravity? And what kind of materials are going to benefit from this? Well, first up, what is microgravity versus zero gravity? When we see astronauts working on the International Space Station, floating around, most people will just call that zero gravity or weightlessness. But all the literature will specifically refer to microgravity. And the difference is that when you have a large object in orbit, one end and the other end technically want to follow slightly different orbits. So if you put objects there, they will tend to diverge and accelerate towards the walls, and therefore they will experience some microgravity. And for people like us, difference between microgravity and zero gravity isn't a big deal, but if you're writing papers on the subject, you better make sure you say the right thing. So what kind of processes are affected by gravity which won't happen in space? Well, consider if I'm, say, making some eggs right now. I'm putting water on the stove, heating it from below. Eventually, what'll happen is the water at the bottom will start to warm up, expand, and it will rise to the top because it's lower density. That generates convection. So if you have different thermal gradients, you will get convections. You won't get that when you are performing this in microgravity. Similarly, if you have fluids which are different densities and they are mixed together, they will tend to separate in on Earth, but they won't separate in microgravity. Finally, if you have, say, sediments, right, particles suspended in a fluid, which again are different densities, then the particles will tend to settle out or rise to the top depending upon their different densities. In microgravity, this doesn't happen, and that enables all sorts of interesting production. So if you have a production process which involves different material types mixing and cooling into a solid, you will be able to do that more slowly in space and potentially produce better materials. So scientific experiments exploiting these kind of advantages have been taking place on the International Space Station and even on Shuttle and Mir before that. One example is growing protein crystals, where what you would do is you would take some protein and then you would allow it to form into a crystal so you could then illuminate it with X-rays and derive its structure. And certain crystals were just really reticent to form large enough crystals for the X-ray process. But in zero gravity, without gravitational forces providing like shearing forces and twisting the crystals, they could perform, create much larger crystals on orbit and then analyze those on the ground. So there's hundreds of proteins that have been crystallized in this way. I believe there was experiments, for example, to study AIDS, the HIV virus, in the very early days of its research. And so these same conditions for crystal growth are the kind of things that are planning to be exploited by Varda Space and, of course, Redwire, which has launched SpaceMD, and there are a number of other entrants. So yeah, Varda is looking at a drug called ritonavir, which is an antiretroviral drug used to treat HIV and AIDS. And it was developed in the 1980s. It was, you know, blockbuster, really important, but it's also something which exhibits crystal polymorphism. That means that the drug molecules will pair up in various crystal forms. And when it was originally manufactured, it took on this form one, which was fine. They figured out all their dosing for it. They were selling it. People were benefiting from it. But then suddenly there was a problem that the factory started producing the same drug, but it was a different, like, it looked different. It wasn't looking like a gel. It was looking like a sort of crumbly powder or something, whatever. But this new drug from the same process was not as bioavailable. It did not dissolve as quickly. And so suddenly all the dosing was off and the drug was no longer effective. Now, this crystal polymorphism is what is happening here. The original type is called type 1 crystal, whatever, type 1 ritonavir. And type 2, the second type that formed, is a lower energy state. So if it comes in contact with the type 1, The Type 1 says, oh wait, this is a much easier club to get into and it will release energy as it transforms into this other lower energy type. And like, there's a whole drama here where they literally had to wipe out the entire factory, and then when they went to another factory, they contaminated that factory and it started producing the bad stuff. They apparently literally had to hire somebody and never get in touch with them. They had to give them the exact instructions on how to set up the lab so that they could start producing the uncontaminated type. Because once the Type 2 got in there, it was contaminated and it was very hard to get rid of. So anyway, there is another crystal type, Type 3, which is, I believe it's like an amorphous mixture of smaller crystals. I don't know that much about it, but I understand that in zero gravity, on Earth's gravity, the gravity will cause the different density crystal types to segregate, and that will accelerate the nucleation. In zero gravity, this doesn't happen, so it's much easier to produce this Type 3 version, which is even lower or even higher energy still, so it's even less stable. But because it's produced in zero gravity and doesn't have the gravity driving the crystallization process, they can produce this. And the advantage of the Type 3 is it is far more soluble and therefore bioavailable. Therefore, you can, you know, modify the dosing. You can guarantee uptake on, you know, more on better cycles. I'm not a pharmacist, but I understand that you're making this much better crystalline form of this drug, and you can do it in zero gravity. So you essentially, they melt the stuff down and then they let it reform into this new form and bring it back, and now it's worth a whole lot more. So that is Varda's like blockbuster drug design. And again, Varda are not the only game in town. There are other companies looking at this, and presumably they are looking at their own interesting pharmaceuticals. Ritonavir is just one of the ones that's easiest for me to explain. Okay, so now let's switch over to semiconductors. My camera here is running on a silicon chip because silicon is what we've really learned to use. It's not the best semiconductor out there, actually. But another semiconductor which has been investigated and has actually been used is gallium arsenide. Now, that tends to find itself in certain military applications, high radiation environments, things like that, high power environments. It has many advantages over silicon, but it is harder to make large chips out of gallium arsenide. So when you're trying to grow your gallium arsenide crystal, first problem that you're going to find in gravity is that you're generating convection. You're heating one side and you're trying to cool the surface, right, so that it crystallizes. Well, that means you're going to start generating convective currents in gravity. And that in turn means that you're moving fluid around. And if you're, for example, doping things, then it can generate areas where you've got more of the material, less of the material. You can generate stresses on the material. As gravity is pulling the crystal down, it can become convex or concave, and that means you're no longer creating perfectly flat surfaces. When you're trying to grow larger crystals, by the way, convection pretty much depends on size. So the larger your object is, the more likely you are to get convection. This is why gallium arsenide crystals that are produced for semiconductor manufacture are maybe like 6 inches across, as opposed to the much larger crystals that are produced for silicon manufacture. If you're incorporating like particles, those are going to sink. If you're you can find issues where if you try to grow it too quickly, you end up with convection driving supercooling near the surface, which leads to like little dendritic, you know, crystals shooting out of the surface and ruining your crystal homogeneity. All of these problems are addressed somewhat by operating in microgravity. And that is why there are companies that think that now that launch costs are coming down, gallium arsenide semiconductors may finally have their day. They may be able to make them much larger than silicon and therefore are of roughly the same size as silicon and take advantage of the properties which are, you know, very much unique to this particular semiconductor. So one company that's looking into this is SpaceForge, and they are planning a very similar model to Varda, where they're going to generate these crystals in space and then bring them back to Earth and then sell those to manufacturers on the Earth, who will then build the chips up on top of them using more traditional semiconductor processes. So now, moving on from semiconductors, let's look at optics. Optical fibers connect the world, right? These little glass lines, you fire a laser in one end, it comes out the other end. That means you can send pictures of your cat halfway around the world. Now, The limitations on this is that the quality of the fiber will affect how far it can go and the amount of energy you need to put in. If you have a poor quality line, it will scatter light out the sides. If you have defects in it, what it can do is cause dispersion in your pulses. So the pulses will go from being very well defined to being smoother and more rounded, and that means that you can't put your pulses as close together, so you lose information density. Now, one of the types of glass fibers or optical fibers that's commonly used or has been discussed anyway is ZBLAN, right? And that's an acronym for zirconium, boron, lanthanum, aluminium, and sodium. And it's a glass which is made of fluoride crystals of all these elements. So essentially, you melt these things all together, mix it up, create like a liquid glass, and then you draw out a fiber from it, right? And a glass means that it's an amorphous collection of crystals. The crystals aren't growing into large nucleation sites, because if they do, that will scatter your laser. Now, you can imagine that in gravity, you're going to start getting differentiation, right? These different density materials are going to separate out, and as they do that, it increases the concentration of one in one specific region, so you start to form larger crystals and end up with lower quality material. So this is something that was recognized, and for a long time they were investigating making these optical fibers in zero gravity. NASA started out with a series of KC-135 zero-gravity aircraft flights, and they demonstrated that their premise was, you know, valid. They flew experiments on a sounding rocket to get more zero-gravity, and then they flew experiments on the International Space Station. And this has all pretty much confirmed that you can, in fact, make much better optical fibers in space. And now that the cost of launch is coming down, the advantages of these new fibers are maybe getting to the point where they can be commercialized. And to that point, Flawless Photonics was launched last year with plans to commercialize this very process and sell their super high quality premium optical fiber cables to people running internet stuff. Or it might just sell them to people that are loving their hi-fi audio system and will pay a lot for cables that are perfect. Now, there's another couple of examples of things that can work in microgravity, which may not be yet at the point where they will be commercialized. One is when you're creating alloys, metal alloys, then obviously you've got different metals coming together and you want them to be perfectly mixed. But again, gravity on the Earth is going to cause a separation. Microgravity is going to keep these things joined together. That means you can cool them more slowly, and that may give you better properties. You can also look at things like biotechnology. We've seen processes where artificial organs, cells and tissues will grow in 3D without scaffolding required, and that has enabled certain types of human physiology testing. But yeah, again, this is not at the point where it's ready to be commercialized by any means. The ones that we're looking at right now are like Varda, Axiom, and Space Forge. All of these companies are interested in actually commercializing this process. And that's why, we're about to see a revolution going forwards in space manufacturing. I'm Scott Manley. Fly safe.